This is the Cedar Ethics Podcast, number 5, for February 2007. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cedar Ethics Podcast, a show about bioethics and the defense of human life. From the Center for Bioethics on the campus of Cedarville University in Cedarville, Ohio. My name is Dennis Sullivan, your host, with a perspective informed by scripture, philosophy, and common sense. In today's podcast, we're going to talk about the new Center for Bioethics at Cedarville University, and I have three items from the news. Recently, radio station WLQT interviewed me about our new Center for Bioethics at Cedarville University. I would like to play a few segments of that interview for you, and then we'll talk about a few stories from the news.
Good morning and welcome to the Education Report. This is a weekly public affairs program on this Clear Channel Dayton station. With the help of our guests, we focus on education issues of all kinds right here in southwestern Ohio. I'm Gary Honert, Executive Director of Public Relations at Sinclair Community College. I'm your host each week, and I welcome your comments and suggestions. Cedarville University, an accredited Christian liberal arts university in Cedarville, Ohio, has a new Center for Bioethics, and its director, Dr. Dennis Sullivan, is our Education Report guest. Good morning, Dennis, and welcome to the Education Report.
Thank you, Gary.
Dennis, let's talk a little bit, first of all, about Cedarville University. Lots of folks in our listening area probably have heard the name. Others perhaps have been there, and certainly we have some students and parents in our listening area. But for the benefit of all of our listeners, tell us a little about Cedarville University itself.
Well, as you said, Gary, it's a Christian liberal arts university. It has about 3,100 students, about 210 faculty, and a long history of preparing students for the professions. It offers both Bachelor of Arts and Bachelor of Science degrees with an emphasis on pre-med, pre-law, nursing, engineering, business, and a growing humanities and English departments and other liberal arts.
Let's define for our audience bioethics. What is it? What does it mean?
Well, first of all, we should start with the word ethics.
Okay.
The word ethics simply defines how we should live the moral life. It really helps us to understand the oughts of our lives. How ought we to live? What should we do when we're confronted with important decisions? Bioethics is the ethics of dealing with biologically related issues which touch all of us, life and death, from the earliest beginnings of life in the womb to how we treat one another in a medical context, how we treat the environment of our world, and of course at the end of human life when we're trying to make important decisions about how we will manage those last days. We have important questions in the area of genetics. We have research ethics. We have clinical ethics. And these are all questions that our young people need to be trained in because they will be entering the professions where sometimes there's not a lot of moral guidance. So the Center for Bioethics came about kind of as an evolution of a number of impulses on our campus. For example, just a few years ago, we conducted a survey with our recent graduates who were then in medical school. We ended up with 23 medical students, pretty much evenly divided as to gender, between ages 23 and 29. 10 of them were in their first year of medical school. 6 were in their second year. 4 of them were in their third year. We also had 3 who were graduates who were then in residency training. Now, all of these students would describe themselves as conservative, as Christians, and I contacted them by email and by telephone, and a few of them I talked to in person. And I asked them some questions. One of the questions I asked them was, What ethical conflicts or issues have you encountered since starting your medical education? Another question I asked them was, as a Christian in a secular environment, did you feel prepared to deal with these? And, of course, we asked them, what background did you receive at Cedarville University or wish you had received to better deal with these issues? We had follow-up with each one of these students. I was a little surprised at our results, and while I won't go into the entire survey, I will tell you that the number one ethical issue that our students are facing was the idea of ethical pluralism. Now, what do I mean by ethical pluralism? Students were surprised that there is just a hodgepodge of opinions about various ethical subjects. And actually, although many of their professors are fairly conservative in their ethics, students had a wide range of opinions, and many had not ever thought about how to deal ethically with various issues. One student described this as culture shock when he emerged from kind of the protected environment of the university and went on into the medical profession.
Now, could you give us an example what one of those surprises would be that came to students with a particular issue?
Well, a good example of that would be the issue of abortion.
Okay.
As you can imagine, from a conservative, evangelical Christian institution, we are generally pro-life on our campus, although we're very sensitive to both sides of the issue. But our students in the survey were surprised that abortion was kind of the default assumption among faculty and medical students. Human nature and human dignity that are very important to us in our conversation, and indeed, these are important philosophical concepts in the area of bioethics, were very poorly defined in medical school classes, if they were ever mentioned at all. Our students felt well prepared in some ways for the struggle because they knew how to articulate their own religious perspective, but they didn't feel as well prepared to deal with the plurality of opinions out there, to engage in a good conversation with others. And that is one reason that we have started the Center for Bioethics at Cedarville.
And that website again, Dr. Sullivan?
cedarville.edu/bioethics or simply cedarethics.org.
And that's the Education Report for Sunday, January 7th. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Dr. Dennis Sullivan, representing the Center for Bioethics at Cedarville University. I'm Gary Honert. Let's go out and make it a great Sunday.
I have several bioethics news stories to discuss in today's podcast. The first comes from the Institute for Regenerative Medicine at Wake Forest University School of Medicine and lead researcher, Dr. Anthony Attila. As they have just reported in the journal Nature Biotechnology, human stem cells can be found in the amniotic fluid. This is exciting news. In a recent podcast, we discussed the controversy surrounding stem cell research. You may recall that stem cells are the starter cells that may become various mature cells of the body. Stem cells from early embryos are often called pluripotent cells. That's from a Latin root that means that they can grow into a variety of adult tissues. They have many powers. Perhaps someday such cells could be used to cure a variety of human illnesses, but harvesting the cells is a real problem since it requires the destruction of embryos, a violation of the sanctity of human life. Well, now comes news that stem cells, nearly as powerful as embryonic ones, can be found in amniotic fluid. This is the liquid cushion that surrounds babies in the womb. Who would have thought that it contained such cells? Dr. Attila and his colleagues have used them to make muscle, bone, fat, blood vessels, nerves, and liver cells in the laboratory. claims Dr. Attila, quote, I feel these cells are pluripotent, just like human embryonic stem cells, end of quote. If this research works out, and Dr. Attila cautions that any clinical applications lie several years in the future, it will make the destruction of human embryos unnecessary. Imagine, men and women of good faith, both liberals and conservatives, could agree to work together on this one, since this type of stem cell research is ethically completely acceptable. Will this news make a difference in the divisive debate in Congress? Well, don't hold your breath. Already the House of Representatives has voted to overturn President Bush's ban on public funding of destructive embryo research, with the Senate due to take up the measure soon. In our second news story, 9-year-old Ashley is afflicted with a large number of physical and mental disabilities. Mentally, she has the capacity of a 3-month-old. Her parents lovingly care for her in their home in Seattle, Washington. They will not give their last names, but they have a website because they want the world to know about their approach to the care of their daughter. Ashley's mom and dad have deliberately been stunting Ashley's growth. In cooperation with pediatricians, they have kept her at 4'5" in height. They claim that they have done this with her best interests in mind, but of course it will also make it easy for them to care for her. This whole story has caused a firestorm of controversy in medical ethics. Pediatricians and endocrinologists gave Ashley massive doses of estrogen to keep her at a child's size. But the treatments didn't stop there. They have surgically removed her uterus to keep her from having periods and have removed her breast buds to keep her from developing adult-sized breasts. This whole idea has been dubbed in the press as Ashley's treatment. Now, in the UK, there's a petition circulating to pass a law outlawing such a treatment as Ashley's treatment as a violation of human dignity. In this country, many ethicists are troubled by the implications of Ashley's treatment. You see, we have a bad track record when it comes to caring for people with disabilities. In the 1920s, 30 states had laws permitting the legal sterilization of the so-called feeble-minded, based on the now discredited ideas of eugenics. And the Virginia law became the model for Germany's hereditary health law of 1933, and I probably don't need to tell you what that led to. In all, 50,000 Americans were sterilized against their will because of the flawed theory of eugenics. Do we really want to return to the eugenics era in this country? Now, I'm sure that Ashley's parents care deeply for her, and I certainly don't want to criticize them too strongly for the burden they bear. But many observers think that they have crossed an ethical line.
Ye fleeting charms of earth, farewell your springs of joy are dry. My soul now seeks another home, a brighter world on high. I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling away from home. I'm to lay this body down. I'm a long time traveling here below. I'm a long time traveling away from home. I'm a long time traveling here below to lay this body down. To
On a happier note, our final story is an amazing testimony to the value of a human life and of one family's efforts to save it. Glenn and Rebecca Markham are a bit overwhelmed about all the publicity surrounding the birth of their baby, born just a few days ago by cesarean section. News services from all over the world have been watching Covington, Louisiana, and taking note of the event. What's so special about this new life? This is a true Katrina baby, a survivor of the terrible hurricane that destroyed so much of New Orleans. The child began life as an embryo from an in vitro fertilization procedure, frozen along with four others in cold storage in a fertility clinic in eastern New Orleans. But the facility was badly flooded after the storm, and Glenn and Rebecca had despaired of saving the embryos. After all, though they were frozen in liquid nitrogen, the clinic was badly damaged, and the outside temperatures were sweltering. Led by a physician, police officers from two states launched a rescue operation in a flat-bottom boat, saving the Markham's precious treasure. One of the embryos was implanted in her womb, and Rebecca recently gave birth. It's a little boy, a brother for their two-year-old son, Wint. Rebecca has said, quote, "We see what the potential of these little embryos is. They mean more to us than just a few cells frozen in a hospital." End of quote. The Markhams thought for a long time about what they would name their new baby. If it had been a girl, someone even jokingly suggested that they call her Katrina, an idea that didn't get very far with the parents. Since it is a boy, they decided to name him after another flood survivor. They have named him Noah. That's our program for February 2007. Our website at cedarethics.org has program notes with links to the news items and commentaries we have discussed today. Our feature music this time was Longtime Traveler by the Waylon Jennies. Bumper music came from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Links to the artists we play are available with our show notes. Our podcast theme music is from Respighi's Gliuccelli. Perhaps you disagree with our analysis of these news items, or perhaps you have additional input. We welcome your comments, and we'll do our best to address your questions by email, or we may even talk about them in an upcoming program. You can contact us with your feedback in two ways. You can leave a comment on our website at cedarethics.org, or you can email us at cedarethics@cedarville.edu. If you have a microphone, you can attach an audio message there as well. Also, check out our companion website at www.cedarville.edu/bioethics. If you enjoyed this podcast, tell a friend about us and subscribe so that you won't miss a single free episode. See you next time on the Cedar Ethics Podcast.